Hey, y'all, I got a question for you. What's a piece of gear that you maybe have unintentionally overlooked in your rig throughout the years? Well, for me, it's always been guitar cables. I figured, it just goes from the guitar to the amplifier or the guitar to the pedal board to the amp, and if one breaks, whatever, I'll just go buy another one. No big deal. Thanks to the fine folks at Runway Audio, though, I have finally seen the light. Runway Audio is based in Nashville, Tennessee, which is awesome for me because that's right down the road. But it's awesome for you as well because Runway has the best cable on the market. And what makes it the best, you ask? Well, it has the lowest capacitance of any cable on the market right now, at 20 picofarads per foot. And pretty much all that capacitance is the ability to store an electrical charge. The lower the capacitance is, the less tone that it sucks from your cable from your guitar on the way to your amplifier. So if you're in the market for anything cable-related, whether it's instrument cables, patch cables, XLR cables, speaker cables, power cables, you name it, Runway Audio has got you covered. And if you go down to my link tree, click the link for Runway Audio, any purchasing you will do, I will get a little bit of a kickback from that, which is always appreciated. So check out all the awesome stuff that Runway Audio is doing and pick something up to get the best tone possible. This episode today is brought to you by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the finest strings on the market. For me, it has been the Orbiters that have been my absolute go-to ever since they have come out, and that's their coated electric strings. But if the coated thing's not your thing, totally get it. The Signatures and the Broadways in their electric line, top-notch quality. For acoustic guitars, they have their Naturals and their Brights, along with the Foxwoods, which are their coated Fosper Bronze. For all you bassists out there, too, they have the Signatures and the Rangers. Full disclosure, the link down below is my affiliate link, so if you would like to check out Stringjoy, click that link down below. Not only will you be getting the finest guitar strings on the market, but you'll also be helping out this podcast, which I greatly appreciate. So head on over to Stringjoy today. I'm not even close to the tip of the iceberg of all the awesome things that Stringjoy does, so click the link down below and check them out for yourself. Welcome back to Man the Helm Podcast. We are back, and Mike has got a new amp today. So what are we going to talk about it? Let's talk about the new amp. Let's get that first.
Well, it was a very big impulse decision. Thankfully, wasn't my cash that paid for it. It was a nice little Christmas present for my mother.
There you go.
But it's a Sir Bella.
So good.
It is.
It's so good.
Absolutely phenomenal. It is probably the best amp that I have definitely ever owned, but definitely one of the better amps that I've ever played. I mean, I've played everything from JCM 800s, 900s, Voxes, Fenders. I mean, I had tons of Fender amps through the years, but it just has that little, that's something.
Dude, it's seldom that I plug into an amp that I'm just like, okay, this is great. You know, like we were talking earlier, and it just like, you don't need to add anything to it. Now, if you do add something to it, it just makes it that much better. But like, for listeners, you don't know this because, you know, you obviously weren't here, but Mike left it over here last night at my place, and I have sat and played straight into that amplifier for hours. And I have not done that in a very long time, and it was crazy just how good it was. I haven't even plugged anything else into it. Have you ran anything into it yet?
Yeah, I ran the Sweet Tea and the Dracaris into it.
Okay, cool.
That Dracaris, I was like, man, this pedal sounds really good. Then I threw it on and I was like, oh, this pedal sounds really freaking great. Right.
Well, that's kind of what I like about like really high end. Well, relatively high end, because I don't like to say high end because that's a kind of an open-ended thing for a lot of people.
Right.
What I consider high end and what other people consider high end might not be the same thing. But you're taking something of quality. Let's say quality, because Sir is definitely a quality brand. If you buy something from them, you're getting top-notch quality, top-notch components. The manufacturing of those amplifiers and their guitars are just insanely good. I've heard great things about their pedals too. I've never had a chance to play any of them, but
I've played a couple. But what I would say is, there's some companies that are known for that certain thing.
Yeah.
And they kind of play most of the gambit. I wasn't crazy about some of their pedals, but I was playing, I think it was the classic HSS.
Okay, yeah.
Into it when I bought it from Guitar Center. And I was like, yeah, so I'll just take this bundle to go.
Right, right.
I was like, you know, it's only $7,000.
Poor financial decisions are made every day. It's fine.
That's part of being a guitar player. It's just a constant stream of poor financial. Hey, I just bought a new amp, a new guitar. What about this guitar?
Yep. There's always something else, man. But speaking of like plugging straight in and loving it, what are some other brands that you have experienced that kind of do that thing?
Well, I'd have played the Dumble Super. Is it the Super Overdrive Special?
Yeah.
The Overdrive or Special. Overdrive Special.
Yeah.
That amp was phenomenal, but it just was way too big of a price point to get into. Obviously, it's a Dumble. But, I mean, every once in a while, I'll find, like, I really like the Fender Concert. It was, I think it was tube amp through the 80s.
Yeah.
And, but it does... It does what it needs to do for the style of music that I was playing at the time. Obviously, a JCM 800, by far to me, the best Marshall amp that has ever existed and probably ever will exist.
It does the Marshall thing very well.
Well, I've played the, the DSL?
Oh, yeah.
And they're fine, but they're not anything that I'm not willing to... I had to learn this the hard way. If you get what you want from the start, then you're not, oh, well, I bought this because I couldn't quite get this. But now, you know, there's certain things that I like and there's certain things I don't. And then you end up, I'd say probably at least 50% of the time, you always end up getting that next thing. But now you've spent like $1,200 for the thing that was $2,400.
Yep.
So you already spent more money than you were originally going to put into it. So you might as well have just gotten the thing or waited to get the thing that you wanted first.
Yeah.
And I learned this the hard way because, you know, a lot of my gear is bought and then modified. And there's certain times that that's more appropriate. Like sure. My Epiphone Black Beauty copy that I bought it for $600, threw $1,000 into it. And I love it, you know, but the purchase price of a Black Beauty from Gibson is obviously like $6,500, $7,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes it makes sense, but there's also, you know, I see people always get leaned to the Mexican Fenders.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, I like it, but maybe the high end's just a little too crisp. Maybe, you know, it bleeds mids like crazy or whatever it is. And then they end up getting a standard or a professional or a vintage or something like that. They end up getting what they want. And I was like, had you just spent the extra $300, $400, $500, you could have just got that already and saved yourself constantly buying, getting rid of, or just keeping and continuing that cycle, because everything has diminishing returns.
Yeah.
And you hear that concept a lot, the law of diminishing returns. You know, if I buy the $3,000 instrument and I could have bought the $7,000 instrument, what are the big differences? And I think that when especially I see parents buying guitars for children or teenagers or whatever, or an adult is getting their first guitar, they'll go buy a $200 crap guitar that is the most difficult thing to play. Now, you or I might not have an issue playing it because we've been playing for so many years and we play consistently and, you know, that's part of one of the things that you do, you teach lessons. But when people go and buy a $200 guitar, I was like, the $500 guitar is going to be infinitely better than this $200 guitar. And, you know, a lot of times that makes people give it up because the action is super jacked up or the frets are absolutely gnarled. You got to practically sand the entire, or you got to shave off the metal of the frets because the fretboard shrunk on it. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, if you get what you want, especially if you already know what you want and it's a price that's attainable to you, you're much better waiting
for sure
and getting what you want already ready to go. It's like, because the Joyo pedal from Amazon might sound like a sweet tea, but it's not a sweet tea.
Yeah. And the thing is with that, it's like you have the, I've fallen into this trap a lot, especially with pedals. I'm buying a pedal just to buy a pedal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is like with that is that, yes, a lot of pedals are typically made relatively the same way.
Yeah.
But you know, and it is something that, about that course that, you know, that we did, while the $50 guitar pedal is the same as the $150 guitar pedal, the $150 guitar pedal is more likely to last you through tough gigging or, you know, random drops, because it happens.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, do you want to buy a $50 pedal that you got to replace a year later? And then another $50 pedal and another $50 pedal. And you see constantly where people will buy something, it falls apart, and then now I got to go buy another thing again.
Right.
It's like, it's not like a high wear use item like guitar cables or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like everyone knows you got a box of cables that are good, semi-good, and then you have a box of a graveyard of bad cables, because I'm immediately guilty.
Yeah.
Because I just bought more guitar cables today.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, I'm not going to go buy the $2,000 gold tipped guitar cable because no. But at the same time, am I going to go spend a little bit extra to get a brand that I know I can trust, that I know that I, you know, if I have an issue, I can contact them easily? It's just like the TalkBox that I had, which was the craziest thing. Attenuated my sound into oblivion, whether it was on or off.
Yeah.
It just, it was such a pain. It was the third TalkBox in a row that I had tried, and all of them were broken for a certain reason or another. But I contact MXR and they're like, oh, well, we'll send you a box. Here's a shipping label. You know, we will take care of everything. We'll, you know, go contact the company. We'll let them know that this is what's happening. They'll refund you. Everything will be kosher. You'll be good to go.
Yeah.
And we'll contact you whenever we kind of figure out. And if you want to get something, you know, we'll work with you to get that figured out. Because, like I said, I bought it brand new in the box. And I went back to the place that I bought it from. And they're like, well, we have no idea what to do because it's not really a returnable item. Because, obviously, you shove the tube in your mouth.
Right. Well, I will say that's what I like about when. Okay, so for instance, like, let's use the Joyo thing. You know, you're getting what you pay for at that point. And what you're and what you're paying for when you're getting something from, like, let's say JHS, Wample, or Sir, name whatever, you know, major company, you're not only getting a quality piece of product, you're getting that customer service. Because I know for a fact, if something goes wrong with a Wample pedal that I bought, when I email Wampler pedals, the likelihood of Brian reading it and possibly putting the motion to get it fixed is pretty high, you know, opposed to me trying to contact somebody at God knows where Joyo is made, somewhere, you know, in Asia.
In China.
But right. They're going to tell me, well, it costs more to ship it back to us than it does for us to actually fix this thing. So we're okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, I don't know that for sure. I could be speaking completely out of turn, and maybe Joyo has phenomenal customer service. I've never gotten a hold of them. But
and like, it's not, if you find a cheaper pedal because you're interested in a certain effect,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, I want to check out a flanger and I found it on Reverb for $25.
Yeah.
Or I could buy it brand new, like the top of the line, whatever, for $150. Like, I get stuff like that, but it's when you're, the biggest issue that you can run into either while recording, playing at home, or even gigging is reliability.
Yeah.
Because if it dies mid set, you're screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if you're in the middle of recording and you're trying to lay something down, you know, yeah,
it can absolutely just kill the vibe.
Well, and what's that? There's that phrase, two is one and one is none.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So that's why, like, it always blew me away gigging where you'd play with these guys and they'd have like, and maybe this is me just being, you know, a pet peeve of mine was guitar players showing up with one guitar.
Yeah.
It's like, hey man, what happens if something happens to that guitar? You know?
If anything, I'm a little bit more crazy with it, because anytime, especially like if we have like different tunings, like not E to drop D or something
Sure.
But if it's like, hey, this is going to be D standard, this is going to be drop C, this was going to be E flat and E.
Yeah, yeah.
I am one of those crazy people that I have the main and a backup for every single tuning that I have. Well, I also have, you know, like 14 guitars.
Sure. You have the means to do it.
Yeah. But I do that because I've broken strings mid-set. I've had electronics issues mid-set. I've had where one time the tuning peg, like the nut wasn't all the way locked down on the tuning peg.
Yeah.
And it pulled part of the tuning peg out. So it was completely unusable. And it's like, you know, I'm not BB King at the Regal Center Theater or whatever it was, whenever he's singing and playing a little bit and putting his new string on. I was like, nah, I don't have that, those skills.
Well, I don't think you need to be like that, that on point. But the point that I'm trying to make is two things. You need to be prepared for the eventuality of that something is going to go wrong with your gear. Whether, like you said, whether you're just playing in your bedroom, whether you're gigging, whether you're recording, it doesn't matter the application. Something eventually, it's hardware. Something's going to break eventually.
It's electronics.
Yeah. But the biggest thing for me is when you buy stuff that's not, you know, so cheaply manufactured that just the act of possibly stepping on it might break a switch, or I mean, I've seen entire casings for pedals just crack, you know.
Behringer.
Well, and for what they're worth, yes, they're $25 pedals and they sound pretty good for what it's worth. That being said, though, you're stepping on a piece of plastic.
You're stepping on a piece of plastic that is made, and that's also where, like, the difference between different amps, different guitars, pedals, whatever, is when you buy stuff that is made to sell cheap, it is made in probably the tens of thousands.
Yeah.
And so you are getting the easiest way that they are making this and the cheapest way they're making it. Because if I'm charging you $25 for a pedal, it probably cost me less than $2 to make it.
I was going to be a little generous and say $5.
No.
But it's
literally like, The general like markup price is typically it's like 10%.
Sure.
And then you have, you know, obviously getting it there, paying whomever, and then also overhead for whoever is selling it. And I was like, because if you could buy pedals directly from the manufacturer, you could probably save $30 to $40 easily.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, what you're getting. And but you know, there's a lot of things to consider whenever you're making a purchase with your wallet, you know, especially if you're, you know, I think some people get not necessarily rose tinted glasses, but they make a decision that they're going to purchase something that day.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And if they don't have what you want, just wait. I promise you, especially where we're at right here, My buddy, he was interested in a Les Paul. He's in Germany.
Yeah.
I was like, you can't play it. I don't play like you. I was like, I can go check it out and be like, yeah it's nice. Cool. It's a Les Paul.
Right.
I was like, but you liking it is the most important thing. I was like, you're going to give me $2,500 to go buy this thing for you, but you haven't even played it.
Yeah.
And I was like, so while there are good deals and if you want me to go and go take care of it, then I will. No problem. But nothing compares to playing an instrument, because I don't care if you play 100 of the same model, color, whatever, of Les Paul. All of them are going to play a little bit different or a lot different.
They're also going to feel different in your hands, man. Right. Like the subtle nuances that you wouldn't really think about. And maybe you wouldn't even notice just by looking at it.
Yeah.
The second it's in your hands, you're like, oh, that's kind of weird. Or that's really awesome. You know, there's like, that's like what that Les Paul we talked about before, man. Like, that's why I pulled all those guitars off the wall. I think I pulled like 40 guitars down that day. You know what I mean? Like, and that was the point, to figure out what was going to be the best playing guitar for me.
Right.
And I think that's it drives me nuts. I guess I just don't understand it, because, you know, I'm like everybody else. I love getting on Reverb, and I love Sweetwater and Zounds and, you know, American Music Supply. I love browsing and looking at all the cool stuff. There is no way you could ever convince me though to buy a guitar, unless it was something like, I don't know, like a, like something I was going to mod and I didn't really care too much about. You know what I mean? But if I'm going to spend upwards of anything over $1,000, I want my hands on that guitar. You know what I mean? Yeah. Same with the amplifier. I want to sit and play it. I want to hear it. I want to see how it reacts, you know?
Yeah. And I think that as far as, you know, how many things are becoming, oh, I'm going to hop on Amazon and I'm just going to put this in my cart and I'm going to go. You know, it's different when you're buying a television, because televisions should do relatively the same thing regardless
of
what it is.
Subtle nuances, but you can look at the specs.
Yeah, you can look at the specs. And it's like, you know, I was like, but you're not playing a television. You're not holding it in your hands for however long. You're not looking for this television to interact with typically anything other than like a video game console.
Sure. And, you know, like this, like I was talking about, I had a friend of mine at work that was talking about guitars and how he was into it, and found out that he is kind of like a beginner getting into it.
Yeah.
And it was fine, but it kind of made me laugh, because he was just like, man, I was browsing through and I saw that all these different guitars, that was the same model and they gave all the weights. Why would they do that? And I was like, well, because if you're gigging and you're standing for, I mean, especially around here, if you're doing a cover gig for 4 hours, a point whatever difference in weight might be the difference between you buying it, because it's going to be comfortable on your shoulders and back, you know?
Yeah, I know. I saw a Les Paul online recently, and it was like almost right at 11 pounds. And Jesus. I was like, hell no. I was like, yes, I've always wanted to play, you know, a Redwood Oak and just stand there for three or 4 hours.
I don't know what mine weighs, but there's been some gigs where it's just like, I'm like, why am I so tired? And I'm like, oh, this is why. I look down and I'm like,
I know a lot of them typically sit in that like 9 pound area. But
I think mine's about 9. I can't remember for sure though. Like I said, though, I know we've talked about this too. I don't really get into the nitty gritty of stuff. I just, if it plays good, it is good.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, you know, I was like, if frickin' Toes in a Bossy can play some heavy, crazy H string.
He is a very large individual though.
He is a very like buff individual.
Right, right.
I was like, Jesus. I was like, you scary.
Well, what's that other guy? I'm going to hate myself for not remembering his name. Jared James Nichols.
Yeah.
Massive man. Yeah. Like a Viking.
I was watching a video with him, and I think it was the guy from Pedal Pond, or maybe it was, I think he was like with Joe Bonamassa for something. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, Joe Bonamassa is like a really tall, skinny, skinny dude. I mean, he's pretty tall though. Not like freakishly or anything, but it's like, and I was like, he's probably like 6 foot roughly. I was like, you're a lot bigger than 6 foot.
Well, I knew right off the bat because, you know, him playing, you know, Les Paul style guitars, and they just looks like toys almost in his hands sometime. And I'm just like, oh my God.
Well, I was devastated because I don't know what I was looking up. I was looking up the like the custom shop Stevie Vaughan number one.
Yeah, yeah.
And like randomly, like a Reddit post popped up, and it's like, did you know Stevie Vaughan was so short? And I was like, what are you talking about? Man was 5'4". I was like, well, that is a little like blowing my mind right now.
Dude, why is it that people do that? I did the same thing when I met Brian Wampler for the first time. I was like, why aren't you taller? Why do we put that in our head that people that we you know, we see online or we see on TV or we see, like, you know, famous people, why do we expect them to have this, like, larger... I think that's what it is. Well, they have that larger-than-life stature, metaphorically. And that's...
Well, you think of him larger-than-life, and it's like, you know, I was like, you know, I've seen him, like, on stage... Not, obviously, in person.
Sure, yeah.
But I've seen him on stage, like, with, you know, Double Trouble. And I was, like, starting to really, like, look at some of his old videos and realizing, like, how far back they are away from him.
Optical illusion.
And I was like, damn it, Hollywood, you ruined it again.
Yep.
I was like, it just kind of, and it's, you know, again, like you said, it's, you see some of these people larger than life, you know. I was like, even Hendrix was like 5'9", 5'10".
Yeah, he's a short guy, small guy.
Relatively, you know, average height, but it's like, you know, when you see them on stage and you see, like, I guess the aura.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Probably said that terribly, but whatever.
Aura.
Yeah, whatever. I'm from Texas. Whatever. We get over it. Anyways. Not everything's better in Texas, especially grammar.
Yeah.
But, you know, you see these guys play and you're just so enamored with them. You would just imagine, I mean, they seem 10 feet tall almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially, who is it? Phil Sace.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like he's pretty decently tall, but like seeing him at gigs and just being like, dude, you could be like 30 feet tall and I'd be pretty convinced at this point. He's just huge, and it's like, I was like, you know, it's pretty bad when tone is like, yeah, that makes you taller.
There you heard it here first, folks. Tone makes you taller. So if you want to be taller, get a Sir Bella.
Yeah, get a Sir Bella and, like, you know, another $5,000 or $6,000 guitar and call it a day. Yeah,
dude. See, that's the problem, man. Like we were talking about this earlier too. After doing this, trying to figure out where Sir dealers are at and knowing that there are two within an hour away from me, I'm about to make some very poor financial decisions.
Trust me. I was like, the worst thing that could ever happen to me is winning the lottery. Cause they'd be like, all right, congratulations. Here's the lottery check. What happened? It took me about 30 seconds and I just bought the entire guitar store.
Well,
it'll be all right.
To be fair, that's probably a better route than what most people do, because you could at least sell that on the used market and probably make a decent amount of money.
I mean,
you can sell
blow and cars too. Well,
that's very true. The problem with blow is, you know, if that's what you're doing, you know, you're usually not selling it.
You're typically using it.
Yeah, so it gets a very expensive hobby very quickly. Yeah, don't be a musician and do drugs. Do one or the other, kids.
Yeah, I have a funny story about that. So we went to go play a
gig. About blow?
No. It's about,
I have a funny story about blow, so I'll wait.
I have a funny story about meth.
Oh, meth. Okay.
So I went to a gig on Pensacola Beach, and we're waiting. Haven't heard from the singer all day. And finally we get a phone call from a number that none of us recognize, and we pick it up. And he's like, hey, he's like, I'm in jail. I was like, why are you in jail? He was like, well, you know, I was on the boardwalk earlier today and I bought meth from an undercover cop. I was like, well, then congratulations. You can stay in jail. Yeah. Click. Like, I was like, none of us do that. That's no.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I haven't experienced it very much, especially with like harder stuff with playing in bands. I have experienced the audience, you know, like playing cover gigs. The next thing you know, this guy looking like he had just run a marathon, just dead tired. And then coming, you know, saying like, oh man, yeah, you guys are awesome, man. I really like what you're doing. And then he goes to the bathroom for 15 minutes and he comes back with lockjaw and his eyes are the size of dinner plates. And all of a sudden he's like the most energetic person in the world and wants to get on stage and sing a song with you. It's a good time.
Just meant you had good tone.
I was taller too. Because yeah. Of the tone. No, but that's one thing I've never, thankfully, I've never really experienced, because I have a pretty hard line about that with playing in bands, dude. Like, I don't care about the drinking so much within moderation. You know what I mean? Because, like, I've gone to gigs, I've drank, but it's at most a few beers.
Yeah.
If someone in the crowd buys me a shot, I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? But, you know, the few times I have interacted with people that just do have a problem, which is sad that they have that addiction that they're dealing with, but it's just not productive in that sort of scenario, man. It's just so annoying because, you know, you'd be trying to practice. And I remember this one guy, he would just be laying on the ground because he was either too messed up or recovering from being too messed up.
Yeah.
You know, and it just wasn't productive. It's like, what are we doing, man?
Well, I have a pretty hard line about it anyways, just because, I mean, in my personal life outside of playing music, I had issues with that with a family member, and I was just like, you know, like I don't ever do that myself. Yeah. I don't want anyone to do it around me. If that's what you're going to do, you can do it somewhere other than where I'm at, because right. I just don't have any want or desire to deal with that. And, you know, I was like, even in high school, one of my friends had a fight with his mom and his girlfriend. He was going to join the Marines, and he was walking to clear his head, and he got hit by a truck that drove up on the sidewalk, and that truck drug him like 150 feet. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I've had too many bad experiences with people and alcohol.
Yeah.
To like, even I was like, you know, my wife and I have a couple liquor bottles, but that's the same liquor bottles we've had since we moved here almost 3 years ago.
Right. Right.
And it's just not something that I want to engage in on any regular basis or any recurring, you know, like, I'm going to get messed up tonight. I was like, plus I'm 30 and I'm on medications that don't agree with it.
Dude, I'm telling you, the few times that I have really like tied one on, especially now that I'm getting older, it sucks.
Regret.
Just waking up in the morning, just like, oh, why did I do this to myself? No, but with the gigging thing, that's what I've always tried to explain to people. I've played a few gigs where guys have gotten too drunk, and it's just like, hey, especially the cover gigs, we are providing a service to this audience right now. This venue is paying us money. You need to treat this like your job right now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you wouldn't show up drunk to your job, would you? Well, I mean, some people might, but yeah, I mean,
I was about to say,
you know, this person individually, yeah, you wouldn't show up drunk to your job. Be professional, go there, provide the service that you're being paid to provide. And like I said, in moderation, I have no problem with it. If you, and like you said, once the gig is over and you want to go do your own thing, go do your own thing. Knock yourself out, man. I don't care. But before and during, I'm not having it.
Yeah. And it's sad too, because I've met some phenomenal musicians, but that was the only thing, that was their main driving force, was going somewhere, getting paid, and immediately burning it.
Sure.
back into a bar, or yeah, back into a club, or back into, you know, someone's pocket outside the club.
Yep.
And it's just like, you know, I hate how people treat, like, you know, like the 27 Club.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, oh, it's just a 27 Club. I was like, no, it's a bunch of people that had real things wrong with them. And I was like, don't ever stigmatize to me that dying at 27 is just something normal for musicians.
No.
That, I was like, that's not normal for anything.
No.
I was like, if you bought a dog and 2 years later it died because of mysterious circumstances or because it got into something, I was like, I don't care who you are. I was like, you're still going to be upset.
Yeah.
I was like, it doesn't matter whether your dog lives a year or 20 years. You're still going to be upset.
Yeah. And everybody in that, you know, that club that people, I don't want to say idolize for the reason that they're in the club, but idolize because they were great musicians in their right, would have been like, imagine how much better they would be like now if they were still alive or they were allowed or they were able to live their life to a decent age of, you know, their late 70s. You know what I mean?
Well, a lot of people put pressure on themselves to be this thing. I mean, like, even like reading about and watching stuff about like Elvis, mm-hmm. you know, he was a transitioning point for a complete, not necessarily just him, but he was one of the fading legends of a bygone era.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that stuff like, you know, other than just stuff he had going on before then, but like that can also mess with you because everyone wants to stay on top.
Yeah.
Anyone that says that they're just like, oh, well, you know, I play in a band and I make music and I don't ever want to make anything with it. I just like making music. It's like, yeah, that's true to a certain degree. I was like, but everyone wants a hit song.
Well, maybe not even a hit, but here's the thing. And this is the way I've always thought about it. If you are a musician, let's just take a small sample size of the United States of America. You are a significant minority of people that play an instrument in the United States. If you play that instrument well and you're making music with it, you don't owe it to anybody really, but you owe it to yourself. And I mean, I hate to say you don't owe it to anybody because I don't want it to sound like you have to, but you have a gift that most people can't do.
Right.
And you owe it to at least yourself, I think, to put that out and let people hear it, you know. And that to be said, though, I think what people do is they put especially nowadays, they put too much pressure on validation of numbers. They say, oh, I don't have X amount of this, or I don't have these many people that follow me on whatever, insert social media platform. That doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, if you're being authentic to yourself, you're doing what you want to do, it doesn't matter who's watching your videos, because it's going to get noticed eventually.
Well, and, you know, while they're, you know, like, taking the, like, for YouTube route, for example, PewDiePie has more, probably, viewers and subscribers than probably... not necessarily like the top people mm-hmm. in music, but like pretty much the next or the probably more than the 100 of the non label driven acts.
Mm-hmm.
Like if like, cause I really like this guitar player from, I'm pretty sure he's from England. Rebay Massad.
Oh yeah.
And, I probably butchered that name too, but you know, fantastic guitar player. And it's like, you know, you can be the best at your instrument and you may not get noticed, but if you're being, like you said, authentic to yourself and you're actually trying to drive music and you're trying to drive music forward. And that's, I think that's the biggest thing is like the only way that people became to idolize like Stevie Ray Vaughan, B.B. King, Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, Eric Johnson, you name it, is they have recorded material. Because, and, you know, back in the day, the only way to see these people was either if they popped up on TV or if you drove to where they were going to be. Now you have YouTube, mm-hmm. you have Spotify, you have DistroKid that launches everything into the stratosphere for you to find. And you have all the avenues to find your sound, because, and I was thinking of this earlier today, guitar or music in general, any music instrument is take and give. It's not give and take.
Yeah.
Because the only way that you figure out how to do this one lick that Eric Clapton does is you take that lick and you learn it. But because of your nuances to it, you might change it. And then someone else might take it from you and not necessarily improve on it, but just change it to their nuances.
Yeah,
and so on and so forth. And, you know, every guitar player has a guitar idol.
Yeah.
You know, whether you talk to anyone from today to the future to the past, you know, like Muddy Waters and all those guys probably looked up to guitar players like, what's his name? Crossroads guy.
Oh, Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson.
Sorry, I was thinking of the movie. I almost said Ralph Macchio.
better known as Steve Vai multiple times.
Right.
Steve Vai can't play blues. You're an idiot. That's like saying Guthrie Govan can't play blues.
Right.
But you have to be able to take inspiration from somewhere. You have to be able to take inspiration from the artists that you like and find what makes that artist tick and be able to improve and build upon what they set down. Because at the end of the day, I don't care who you are. I have heard the same blues licks.
Yeah.
For the last 50, 60 years. And it's not anything wrong with that, but it's just, that's kind of how everything happens anyways.
Well, but what, like you said, what makes it interesting is when people stand on the shoulders of giants, so to speak, of the people that they're taking inspiration from, they don't play it. You can play note for note, like a certain song. But you're going, like you said, you're going to add your own nuance to it. You know, just the amount of pressure you have underneath of your fingers when you're fretting
right.
the instrument is going to make it sound slightly different. Your phrasing is going to be slightly different. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some people that can copy and phrase just like insert favorite guitar player.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great. The thing that I find the most value, though, is like what you were just saying, is where I take somebody that I find really inspiring. And I learn a lick of theirs, and I learn how I can use this lick now in any application, whether I'm playing right. a blues thing, rock thing, metal thing. It's just like, okay, how could I use this technique or this lick to kind of achieve what I'm trying to do? And not only does it make me a better guitar player, but, you know, it, like you said too, I don't know, you put stuff out online and some kid might watch it and be like, oh, dude, that's super rad. I'm going to learn how to do that.
And a lot of times you can run into people while you're out. And, you know, because yesterday I told you that my mom knows, what's his name? Guthrie Trapp?
Guthrie Trapp. Yeah.
Knows Guthrie Trapp. Met him through a friend of a friend of a friend and has known him for like 15, 20 years or whatever it was. And it's like, you never know who you're going to run into that is a mainstay of a certain genre or a mainstay of, you know, a certain city, a certain town,
yeah.
a certain style. And you don't know who you're going to run into. You can run into, I ran into Jerry Jones one time at the airport.
Yeah.
Like yeah. just randomly at Pensacola Airport for no reason other than, guess what? He was here.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, man, the thing is with running into people like, you know, I'm going to speak on like a, like the podcasting side of things. You know what I mean? Like nowadays, like you can just send your favorite person a DM.
Yeah.
You know, now that to be said, don't be a creep about it and don't be a weirdo and be like, oh my God, I love you so much. Right. Cause that's just going to throw people off. But what I'm getting at is the whole, like, you know, like if you're out gigging, you know, you had to be present to be known, but if you're doing the social media thing, you still have to do the same thing. Reaching out and, you know, understanding that these people are just people just like me and you, you know, they don't want to be talked to like, oh my God, I love you so much. You know, they want to just have a normal conversation with you. And it's really cool to, you know, get to know people like that just on a, I don't want to say a chance encounter, but yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a, I can't remember exactly how long ago it was, but, you know, there was people blowing up Joe Bonamassa's Instagram.
Yeah.
And just saying just hateful stuff for no reason, you know, and that drives me nuts is people that you can't sit there and just say, oh, this guy sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, that is such a cliche thing. I don't care if it is between Tim Henson, Albert King, you know, Joe Bonamassa, Guthrie Govan, you know, or the Billy Joe Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
They all do things that make their style work. And it doesn't, just because you don't like it does not make it suck. I was like, you go ahead and tell me that, you know, Mozart sucks because you don't like classical music. Well, obviously a lot of people did at the time, because that style of music still exists. That composer is still known. And to be hateful to people that you don't even know, you don't know these people, you've never met this person, and you just want to be hateful because, oh, you suck, you just steal licks or whatever the crap was saying. You know, to the point that he ended up deleting all that stuff, which I don't blame him, because you're going to have just pure hate come your way for nothing other than, oh, you look like whatever, or you sound like crap, or you play like crap. And it's like, okay, here's a test. The next time you want to say some guitar player sucks, submit something of yours to that guitar player. I guarantee they could either A, play it back infinitely better than what you can, or B, they could humble you in so many other different ways. Because my favorite one is Billy Joe Armstrong, whenever he blew up at the iHeart Radio Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and, you know, people don't have any, not all people, some people just don't have any respect for artists and what they do, and the fact that these are people too. If I walked around and every day you woke up, I just say, oh, you're terrible, you suck, you, like, just kill yourself and all this other stuff. It's like, how is that engaging me into changing some behavior that you have such a big issue with that you're going to threaten me and yell at me and scream at me for just craziness?
Yeah, the problem is most of those people that are those internet warriors, you know, they have insecurities of their own, and that's what the problem is. It's not an issue of that you're actually doing something wrong. It's an issue of they're upset about something in their life, and that's really all it comes down to, man. You know, biggest thing for me, it's like, I'm not really big into the social media thing. Like, I have a somewhat decent amount of people that follow, but you know, it's just one of those things that you just don't want to read the comment section sometimes, man. You know, it's not worth your time and effort. Like you said, how is it going to really affect you anyway? Like, these people you don't know, what do you care? Like, I don't care what some random person on the internet says about me. Because if somebody says that I suck at guitar, I'd probably fucking agree with them. I'd be like, yeah, you know, I could be a lot better, man.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just a unison of voices just against you.
And oh, it's hard. Yeah.
And it's the fact that I have a very limited sample size of experience of meeting him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but you're not going to find too many people that are at that level, that are that humble to talk to you. Just the same as a long lost friend.
Yeah.
And the fact of how much he does to affect positive changes in his community,
mm-hmm.
to affect positive changes in how the music industry is viewed, you know, a lot of things are going away. you're not going to find CDs and vinyls and stuff like that, except for people that want to collect that specific thing.
Right.
No one's making, I don't know what the metrics are. I might be completely speaking out of turn, but the metrics on buying CDs, when's the last time you bought a CD?
It's been probably at least 15 years.
Yeah. Like, I've bought CDs from smaller acts.
But
go to Best Buy or go to Walmart and go buy a CD.
Yeah.
Like, no, like, I haven't done that in years and years and years. And you're not going to make all this money off of Spotify unless you have literal millions of listeners.
Yeah. And I think that's what's important. And that's what I like about guys like Joe Bonamassa and then like guys like Andy Wood and stuff like that. Because what they're doing is they're taking the approach that I think you have to do as a musician these days. Not only do you have to write and record and release original music, you also have to be your own marketing agent. You have to be your own booking agent. You have to run your YouTube, any social media account. Like, you have to have like such a high presence. So now you're taking, you know, the job of what it used to be was, I have a band, we play a lot. Some R&D guy come, or an R&D.
Research and development.
Yep. Well, kind of the same thing. Some artist relation guy comes to a bar and sees you, and next thing you know, you're signed to a record deal, and they give you some obscene amount of cash that's really just a credit, and the next thing you know, you're world famous, okay? The problem is nowadays is that doesn't really happen anymore, because it's not, you know, people, they want to see, people in those positions, those artist relations positions, want to see that you've already put in the work and that you already have a fan base, so they don't have to do as much work for you.
Oh, yeah. Because then if it's established, I can take a percentage and then...
Right.
Goodbye.
But here's the thing. If it's already established, why the hell do I need you?
Exactly.
You know,
and that's
what I mean?
Why a lot of these artists are starting to go their own way and handle things on their own, or get people in a position where they're hired through the artist.
Yeah.
Instead of someone hiring them for the artist.
Yeah.
And that for and from are very big differences whenever it comes to how much control you have over your own image. Because there's certain things, and I know I listen to kind of like the background information on Straight Outta Compton.
Mm-hmm.
Like, from smaller characters, I'm not talking about the movie, I'm talking about the actual, like, this is what happened, this is what happened,
right,
this
right.
is what happened, from the people that were there. And, you know, I did enjoy the movie too, but it left out a lot of different things.
Well, sure.
Because it's a movie.
Yeah, yeah. Had to fit it in an hour and a half.
But it's like, you know, whenever they talk about, whenever they're signed contracts with the agent, Jerry Heller or whatever his name mm-hmm. is, and, you know, Ice Cube was like, yeah, he's like, I'm making like a percent, and it's my lyrics, it's my style, it's, you know, all these different things. And, you know, yeah, Dr. Dre's doing the beats, and you know, other people are rapping and other people are contributing, but a lot of this stuff is mine. You know, like F the Police is like pretty much written word for word by him. At least that first opening, everyone knows the opening of it.
Right, right.
But, you know, to get a percent of a percent because you weren't the first person that went forward and put their name there and went, hey, this is my money that I put. And that's also another thing that I see tear up bands a lot is the money.
Yeah.
And yep. I tell people, like, you're going to make money regardless, but if you're not, you haven't even done anything and you're already arguing about money, it ain't going to work.
No.
It's never going to work. And if you were so worried about, you know, sometimes I've had bands where they didn't even want to do more of an exposure gig.
Yeah.
I was like, people have to know who you are to want to come see you. You can't just show up somewhere and go, yes, I brought three friends and my mom.
Right.
I'm going to fill up a venue that takes 150 people.
Well, yeah, you have to have that attitude when you're first starting off, especially, man. Like, if nobody knows who you are and you don't have, I mean, even if you have a halfway decent social media presence, like the way I've always looked at it is if you had like, let's say 100 people that you, that follow your band page or whatever you want to call it, maybe 5 will show up to a gig. Maybe.
That's a big
maybe. And that's what I'm saying. The only reason I say 5 is because 2 of them have a girlfriend or a wife or a husband or a boyfriend
or someone
that they're going to bring
someone
with
they're
them.
Dragging with them.
Right. That's the only reason. Now, that being said, though, the problem that I had in one of the bands that I played in here was, or here in Clarksville, was that's all we seemed to ever do was play these pay for play exposure gigs.
Yeah. Well, no, that's what I was saying. Like, I'm not saying that's what you have to
no,
do.
No, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, there's sometimes there's certain opportunities that can bring more presence.
Sure.
Or more exposure to yourself. Like, because what I was talking about is something that the band actually broke up over,
mm-hmm.
which is the minor league baseball team was going to pay us not very much, but they were mostly going to let us just play and advertise our name and our stuff through them. And we would play at the beginning of the ball game. We would play through like in between the innings,
mm-hmm.
and then we would play like a quick little ditty at the end, and then we were done. So it's a long day, because you know baseball games can take up to like four hours, as long as they don't go into, you know, extra innings or something like that, unless it's like super quick baseball game. But they were like, unless we're getting paid, we're not going to do it. And I was like, we're getting paid, it's just not very much. It's like $100 for the 6 of us.
Yeah.
So you know, it's not even $20 a person. And I was like, but they're feeding us. They're helping us out, get everything in and get us all set up and move us around as they need to. I was like, but you know, this is something that we can bring our own merch to, and we can sell our own merch, and we can link people to stuff that we've done that's on YouTube and so on and so forth. And I was like, cause even when I was, sideways tangent, when I was working for my mom for the insurance agency, the thing that she always said is you have to be your best salesman. You have to sell you before you try to sell other stuff. And if you can't sell yourself, and if you don't actually believe in what you're talking about, then no one is ever going to buy from you.
Well, it's going to be self-evident.
Yeah.
That they're going to see right through that crap.
I was like, you know, if I'm selling some multi-level marketing thing, X Pro Plus, because you know it makes your hair grow and all this other crap, and it's like, okay, like have you ever used it? Well, God no.
Yeah.
it's made with rat urine and uranium. Right. Like, like why would I ever use it?
But it's gonna make you look great.
It's gonna make you look like $1 million.
Well, I think that's a good place to cut it for today. Tone makes you taller. Okay, that's what.
And rat urine and uranium grows your hair.
Well, it'll grow it out of your head.
Yeah.
But no, I don't even know where I was going to go with that. No, yes. Okay. Hey, thank you once again for everybody listening. And we will check you guys next week on Man the Helm Podcast.